So when I was 21, I did a fabulous internship program through the Unitarian Universalist Association that focused on service and spirituality, but also Unitarian Universalist history. And one of the first things we did was we took a field trip to Plymouth, Massachusetts. And most of the day was spent at the UU church there doing a workshop about racism and misappropriation. It was cool to have a day at a very pretty church that has continuous records dating back to 1606 in Scrooby, England, and is possibly the oldest continuous Western spiritual institution in America. But before our workshop at that lovely and fairly impressive, right-looking building intended as a lasting memorial to the pilgrims, we all went to visit Plymouth Rock, the supposed landing site of the Puritans, from whose churches our denomination has descended. Have any of you been to see Plymouth Rock? It's not very exciting. Right? Like, yep, that's a rock. It's like, it's not very big, which is good because they've like moved it around a bit too, right? It's not like it's even always been there. Yep, that's a rock. What I didn't find out about again until years later was a different plaque on a different rock uphill from that landing site in Plymouth. In the last congregation I served over in West Virginia, I had two members who lived part-time in West Virginia and part-time on Martha's Vineyard, where they are members of the Gay's Head Tribe of the Wampanoag. It turns out that one of my former congregants is a nephew of Frank Wamsutta James, who started an alternative tradition commemorated with a plaque on a stone on Plymouth's Coal Hill. You see, Frank Wamsutta James had been asked to give a speech at festivities celebrating the 350th anniversary of the Puritans' arrival in America as a representative of the Wampanoag. But when the Massachusetts officials read his speech, they banned him from the event. So he gave an amended speech uphill from their event, at a different rock, next to a statue of I forgot to give myself the pronunciation here, Assumiquin, also known as Massouat, which means Great Sachem, which stands looking over Plymouth Harbor. In this amended speech, he said, "We forfeited our country. Our lands have fallen into the hands of the aggressor. We have allowed the white man to keep us on our knees. What has happened cannot be changed, but today we must work towards a more humane America, a more Indian America, where men and nature once again are important, where the Indian values of honor, truth, and brotherhood prevail. You, the white man, are celebrating an anniversary. We, the Wampanoags, will help you celebrate at the concept of a beginning. It was the beginning of a new life for the pilgrims. Now, 350 years later, it is a beginning of a new determination for the original American, the American Indian." And of course, the issues that Indigenous Americans discussed 54 years ago at that statue, at that different rock, are the same one, right, that tribes are fighting for today. They fight for their Aboriginal rights, the ability to hunt and fish, and to keep their sovereignty. And we've been seeing more of those victories. Anyone else been seeing, like, some of the dams getting knocked down? So people are finally getting their fish back, right? So these victories keep on coming. This work keeps on going. The Mashpee Wampanoag tribe continues to fight to keep its land in trust, and the reservation it established after officially, they only got federal recognition in 2007, right? So this is current history. This is ongoing history. And y'all know, right, we really, really painfully know the discomfort that non-natives, especially and particularly privileged white folks who have a lot of money and hate, that discomfort they felt for that speech in the 70s carries on today and continues to take on new permutations. There are too many who would rather tell a different story, a story born out of the urge to take a Civil War holiday dedicated to bringing people together in gratitude into a celebration of colonialism and a false narrative about how this country began. Because of course, right, like as we talked about in the puppet show earlier, as our fabulous youth talked about earlier, the holiday of Thanksgiving began as a proclamation from President Lincoln at the urging of magazine editor Sarah Josepha Hale, who did, in fact, write Mary Had a Little Lamb. I pretended in the skit that I didn't know that, but I do know that. His Thanksgiving proclamation, like, wasn't a new thing, right? Presidents George Washington, John Adams, also a Unitarian, and James Madison all proclaimed days of Thanksgiving, though not necessarily in November. And by the late 1840s, right, some form of harvest Thanksgiving celebration was already observed in 21 states on various November dates. And so by the time of the Civil War, like, we were divided in a lot of ways. And one of the ways we were divided is that Thanksgiving was this thing that Yankee Harvest did as a celebration, but that, like, Christmas wasn't really a thing yet, that we Unitarians hadn't made it a thing yet. Thanksgiving was like a northern holiday, and then Christmas was a southern holiday. And part of what happened in the aftermath of the Civil War was that folks were like, what if we all had holidays together, right? Like, what Abraham Lincoln and Sarah Josepha Hale were attempting was to create this new story, this new thing happening about the United States of America, a story of a national holiday for everyone on the fourth Thursday of November. And this was, at the time, incredibly controversial. We kind of think of Thanksgiving as something that, like, everybody does, and we have to, like, go hang out with our conservative family members, right? But, like, this actually started as this incredibly controversial progressive idea. And interestingly, it was held up as an example by those who advocated for chattel slavery as an example of what they called Puritanism. And what they meant by that was completely different at the time. Like, you know how words can really change? At the time, when, like, conservative politicians were talking about Puritanism, I found this amazing Confederate political cartoonist who portrayed Puritanism as supported by pillars that included socialism, free love, spirit rapping, rationalism, and Negro worship, right? So, you know, basically DEI, right? Diversity and inclusion. The sort of thing supported by men who also advocated for women's rights and abolition. The horror, right? So the idea of a holiday of gratitude and inclusion was considered, as some would say today, incredibly woke. And all those foods we think of as traditional Thanksgiving food, right? Like, they're only traditional because Sarah Josepha Hale, like, published a bunch of recipes and was like, here's my new holiday, and here's what y'all should eat. Right? Like, which is cool because, like, that's some interesting women's history, right? That's cool. But also, like, you don't have to do what some white lady told, published in her magazine in the 19th century, unless that's, like, fun or comforting or joyful for you. Like, eat whatever you want on Thanksgiving. It's all made up. So this week, we honor those who grieve the history of colonism and the violence of our colonizing ancestors. And we honor those who celebrate the history of women and progressive political leaders bringing people together to eat cranberries and stuffing and offer gratitude. And we honor the many stories and the complex history of these days. And I hope we use this holiday as a reminder just to nourish our bodies and rest. Please take naps. All right. Actually, I want to do a thing I wasn't going to say. I want everyone to raise your right hand. I will rest. No, say it big. I will rest.
I will rest.
I will nourish my body.
I will nourish my body.
Thank you. And I hope, in addition to that, we will rededicate ourselves to telling and preserving true stories. Even and especially when those in power, those who have the power to publish our textbooks, those who are claiming they're going to try to take apart the Department of Education entirely, those fascists who are coming into power and are going to tell us what stories we are allowed to tell, I hope we will rededicate ourselves to telling true stories, right? I hope we are going to continue continue to hold up our Indigenous brethren, to hold up women's history, to demand the truth, and to keep telling the stories, that we will keep practicing gratitude alongside our grief and our anger, because that is how our Indigenous brethren have kept themselves together through hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years of genocide, right? We don't need to look to some white people in Europe to see how we can fight fascism. We have Indigenous people here. We have members of the global majority. We have Black Americans here who have been practicing resistance for years. And I hope that in this hard and scary time, in this work in the years ahead, we will remember that the fascists are going to be targeting the librarians and the historians, the record keepers and the archivists, right? And that we will be in solidarity with them at the school board meetings, right? Because the fascists are going to be there. We got to be there too. Even here, we got to keep showing up for each other and telling true stories and listening to our children, right? We can do it. We know we can. We have before.